As we build up to the pre-summer onslaught of franchise-driven sci-fi, fantasy, and action movies, two distinctive offerings rolled out the last few weeks, each designed for very different screen sizes. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Filmmakers James Cameron and Robert Rodriguez have built a future world with an army of computer wizards in the big screen Alita: Battle Angel, and Netflix continues to back talented writers crossing new boundaries in the small screen arena with their new short form and very original series, Russian Doll. Joining me to discuss these two new titles, I'm happy to have back on the program frequent On Film contributor Kyle Alvarado. Good morning.
Morning. Thanks for having me back.
Sure. Well, both of these things have been out for a week or two already, but Alita is just entering its second weekend, so why don't we start with that?
So Alita: Battle Angel, that's the adaptation of the similarly titled manga series. Adaptation modified it slightly, and it centers on a cyborg found at a junkyard named Alita, who's played by Rosa Salazar. So, I mean, the whole movie's about her trying to figure out who she is. It was directed by Grindhouse director Robert Rodriguez. The film was written by James Cameron, and it follows a lot of his normal traits as a filmmaker. It's a very sort of sentimental film, but I think the nice thing about this adaptation is that Robert Rodriguez brings a lot of his sort of Grindhouse sensibilities. And the really good thing about it is it has a very strong supporting cast with Jennifer Connelly, Christoph Waltz, and Mahershala Ali, the latter of whom is having a blast. He's just chewing up his scenes, and it's a really fun film to watch. But the single greatest asset that this film has is its visual effects, and the CG character in Alita, played through performance capture by Rosa Salazar, really creates a living, believable character, even when her face is modified slightly to sort of reflect the giant eyes in manga. A lot of her emotion comes through, and it's a shame that we don't see the actress because it's such a good performance. But under the weight of, you know, carrying a $170 million film, I think she does a really good job. What'd you think?
Yeah, this was a film I was not prepared to be so engaged with, frankly. And it's had mixed reviews, which we don't care about on this show. Independent thought, right? I think it's underperforming at the box office, probably to James Cameron's chagrin and disappointment. You hit the nail on the head for me was as the film went on to base an entire film so gutsily on an animated, essentially an animated character that has to live in a real world with real actors, was amazing that they pulled this off. I think it's a real milestone in not just motion capture, but also all the other trickery that goes into creating these CG characters. And even though there is a real actress being captured in her performance, as you mentioned, the face and her design is not meant to be lifelike or realistic. There is an aesthetic to her that differentiates her from the actual actors that are not CG in the film, particularly those eyes. And it was those eyes, I think, that were the window that sucked me right into that world. I've never seen a character animated like that that is so engaging and emotive. And I found myself actually at times distracted just watching her eyes.
Yeah, me too.
Which are oversized. And the way they focus and the way they have life behind them, it's a fascinating thing to watch how they pulled that off. So I think it's a milestone film in the technological aspects. You know, if there's a downside to the film, it's probably James Cameron's writing, which he's not the greatest screenplay writer. And the fact, I think, that this film was in gestation or development for 17, 18 years, he's been wanting to make this almost since 2000.
Yeah.
And because of the Avatar sequels, he finally handed it off to Robert Rodriguez, who I think capably directs this film.
Yeah, the action scenes in it are, you know, they're great as always. You know where everything is at all times. The camera doesn't suffer from overshakiness. Bill Pope was the DP on this one, and he shot The Matrix and some of the earliest Spider-Man films. And I think it's nice just to have a lot of great technicians behind something like this. I kind of want to push back a little bit on the script. Just because, you know, depending on your sensibility of how you respond to James Cameron's kind of schlockiness as a writer, either you'll be kind of enwrapped in the corniness of it or you'll find yourself rolling your eyes.
You have to just let it flow
over. So depending on your interest in the genre and your tolerance for Titanic-level romance, I think it's a very enjoyable film.
But I found there's a teenage love interest that Alita has in this film that's the weakest part for me.
Yeah.
And to me, it suggests the 18-year development process that in today's day and age, I don't think you even need that character. The interesting thing to me is her relationship with her quasi-father doctor who recreates her,
yeah.
Not her real biological father, but Christoph Waltz's scientist character. And it has this interesting Pinocchio-like story mm-hmm. developing that never fully goes where it could. So
yeah.
I just felt in some of those relationships, and this is a failing of a lot of Cameron films, is that they're not as deep and nuanced as they could be.
Yeah, I think all of his films just need one quick write-up. But it's also worth noting that it's going to play in the IMAX, the local IMAX, for about another week, and it's worth seeing it on a big screen because
yes.
it's one of those big, big screen
I agree.
Worth, you know, it's worth seeing that kind of stuff.
And I would say that James Cameron is one of the last filmmakers in America, at least, who can pull off these fairly original stories that are not based on Marvel or DC mm-hmm. cinematic
yeah.
universes or Star Wars franchises. you know, this, for most viewers, will be brand new material, mm-hmm. and it's rare that we get these big budget science fiction films anymore
yeah.
that are based on original stories.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, overall, I quite enjoyed it.
Fantastic. Well, on a very different scale, I want to switch gears to Netflix, who has been on a production speed train the last year, pumping more money into original content than all the cable and network television channels combined. The pace of new releases, however, can be dizzying to keep up with, let alone watch. One recent short series that I can highly recommend is the intricately designed and pleasingly substantial Russian Doll. Natasha Lyonne conceived, wrote, and stars as Nadia, the fiery red-headed focal point of this spiraling mind-bender of a show, a New York computer code writer. She's confident and barreling through life on her own terms until the night of her 36th birthday, where upon exiting a party in her honor, she gets hit by a car, dies, and finds herself right back at the same party she just left, in the bathroom and staring at a wall. There are worse days to relive, I suppose, but as played by Lyonne, this protagonist is unmoved by the well-wishers that surround her, anxious and increasingly agitated by what just happened. Confoundingly, no one else seems to be wiser to her ellipsis. Each time she tries to move on with her night, she finds herself violently dispatched by one freak accident after another, only to be deposited right back at the bathroom sink where we first met her. You know, Kyle, this was one of those shows that I was really on the fence for the first two episodes
mm-hmm.
because it certainly will recall to many the Harold Ramis and mm-hmm. Bill Murray film,
yeah.
Groundhog Day, this notion that you have to relive over and over and over this mm-hmm. same day. But what was fascinating is as it unfolds, it goes deeper and stranger and really is its own thing. It's a unique creation, and all of those concerns went out the window, I think, by episode three for me.
Yeah, and I think the show knows that it has a very limited scale to get
yes.
people on board, especially with something so with such a high concept. And yeah, I felt the same way as soon as episode three kicked in was when I was just fully mm-hmm. invested, and I had to get to the end. Natasha Lyonne, who's had a great career, kind of when you look at the beginnings of it with Slums of Beverly Hills up till now, anchors the show, and there's a lot of humanity she instills with her character and,
mm-hmm.
and her haircut, which it's this messy, curly, redheaded mass, frames her face, and the show uses a lot of close-ups
mm-hmm.
With her face and everything you need to see when her character is going through this kind of an extraordinarily crazy event, everything you need to see is in her eyes.
And not always likable,
yeah,
which I really like too. She has a very distinctive features and approach to her character that is not playing to beauty or trying to allure the audience that way. This is just a woman in her mid-30s dealing with this purgatory she finds herself in.
Mm-hmm.
And
the fun she has with it as she sort of learns how
right.
to use the system in a way.
I think, too, her co-writers, Leslie Headland and Amy Poehler, the Amy Poehler from SNL and Parks and Rec, that most people will know, you know, I thought at the beginning, this is not a light comedy, which was what I was expecting when you see Amy Poehler's name attached. And then it shows a fascinating direction where this trio could go with mm-hmm. writing. Poehler often likes to combine her talents with others. And while there's humor in some of the situations, this is not a comedy, and it does get a little dark.
Yeah,
towards the end.
But it's worth noting that there's some like legitimately great belly laughs. Like,
yes,
man, the way they frame some of them.
Right, and it's also one of those puzzle films. And one of the things that Amazon and Netflix and the other streaming services have allowed for now is this is essentially a 4-hour movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's 8 half-hour episodes. They're very breezy, very quick to get through. Things move quickly. But it's so intricately constructed, this puzzle, because we're reliving the same day. You're just searching for tiny variations in the scenes as she goes back through the same party with mm-hmm. the same people, where people are placed, objects, et cetera, et cetera. I also was incredibly impressed just with how the writers must have worked all of this out beforehand.
Yeah.
The only way you could actually shoot this film is to have very detailed notes about exactly what you're trying to shoot every time, because it all has to come together. And it does harmoniously by the end,
mm-hmm.
which I thought, I don't know about you, but by episode 6, I thought, you know, they have constructed such a complex, almost like a black hole of a problem for themselves. Mm-hmm. I started wondering, okay, there's only 2 episodes left. How are we going to resolve all of this?
Yeah. And it finds an interesting way. It kind of makes its own little escape hatch. And the nice thing about it, I can't remember the last time I saw a show that wrote itself into a corner and set itself up for a second season that left you wanting so much more.
You think there'll be a second?
That's what the rumors say. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I'm fine seeing it just as a harmonious whole. It really stands on its own, and I think it's the sort of show that for adventurous people, they could sit down and binge for 4 hours straight and just mm-hmm. knock it out.
Yeah, and you'll keep thinking about it, too. It's has a lot of deep themes to it.
Well, 2 recommendations, it sounds like, this weekend for people going out, and if they're not doing anything Sunday night, there's a little show on television called The Oscars.
Oh, yeah.
Any predictions?
It's been kind of a wonky year for award shows. All the guilds and the critics groups have been
all over the place.
Yeah. because of that, I find myself not necessarily invested in all the categories. The only one I'm most excited about is animated feature. I'm really hoping Into the Spider-Verse takes it. It was such a groundbreaking film, mm-hmm. and I have been promoting that film for ever since it came out.
It would be an upset, uh-huh. certainly. Sony Pictures making the best animated film, and I totally agree. I still can't believe what they did in that film animation-wise.
Yeah. What about you?
You know, I think I've been on the Roma bandwagon since the first moment I saw it months ago, and it would be a huge moment for a Spanish-language film to win, and a black-and-white film
mm-hmm.
to win the Best Picture. Not just Best Foreign Language Film, but Best
Picture. Yeah.
And a streaming film. It would be a huge night for Netflix and a sea change in how we see films and how we think about the production of films. So Roma, for me, has a lot of interesting historical tie-ins to it, and I think it could go all the way. So we'll see.
We'll see.
One more day. Well, my guest today has been frequent On Film contributor Kyle Alvarado. We've been discussing the new special effects-laden action film Alita: Battle Angel and the new Netflix original short series Russian Doll. Alita: Battle Angel is rated PG-13, and I would recommend you stick to that suggestion, as some of Alita's cyborg violence could be quite disturbing to younger viewers. On Film's engineer is Seth Van Meter. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.